Welcome to everyone. I'm Debbie Williams. I'm the Director of Marketing at Hyperlocology. For those new to us, we are a multi-location marketing platform that helps businesses, particularly franchise businesses and brands with hundreds or thousands of locations, manage local digital advertising all in one place. I'm so excited to be here today. We are talking to leading industry analyst, Matthew Scott Goldstein, also known as MSG, and Justin Bartek, who is head of marketing at Jinya Ramen Bar. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today, guys.
My pleasure.
Awesome. Justin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I'm Justin Bartek. I am the director of marketing for Jinya Holdings, which consists of three ramen brands, Jinya Ramen Bar being the main brand. We have a fast casual version of that called Bushi. And then we have a Robadayaki sushi concept called Robada Jinya here in LA only. So lots to do.
So Justin, you've been working at Jinya for how long?
I started actually February 26, 2020. So 3 weeks before the pandemic. So it hasn't been too long, but it feels like about 10 years.
right. It's like dog years, right?
Yes.
And where were you? And where were you before that?
Before that, I was director of marketing at the Halal Guys. So obviously they're based in New York. I'm based in LA. So that was interesting. I was there. I was in New York, you know, at least once a month. But it was pretty exciting. That brand was almost at 100 locations. So it was a fun challenge, really.
The original Halal, was that on the 6th Avenue and like 54th, right by the Hilton Hotel, right there?
53rd, yeah.
53rd.
That was the main cart. They expanded to four carts. So there was another one on 7th and 53rd, and then there was a couple others. So they just owned that corner for years, for 30 years. Really crazy brand. I mean,
crazy success. And where'd you go after that?
After that, I came here. So that was my position before.
Oh, so where were you before that?
Before that, I was with Veggie Grill. So a concept here in the West Coast, vegan and vegetarian concept based in Santa Monica. And then before that, I was with a digital startup. So I was doing digital advertising at a startup called Circle Street.
And I see a pattern here that in your previous jobs, it always feels like you're an emerging startup brand. Is there a reason why you're drawn to that?
You know, I've worked for brands like Qdoba and Baja Fresh when they were owned by, you know, major QSRs like Wendy's and Jack in the Box. And what I found over time is I just prefer working in this environment at emerging brands. It feels like a startup. I just like working directly with CEOs and sort of having a bigger impact, if you will. So that's kind of what I've fallen into and what I enjoy.
Okay. And then you live at home right now with your wife and daughter. She's five, right?
She's five. Yes.
And then how much time do you spend at home versus in the office?
Well, the day we could come back to the office, we were back in the office. So we're a very small, we're a small team. And if you look at our office, we're near the Burbank Airport, so it's almost like a big hangar. So it's a big open space. So it's not scary. It's not a really tight quarters. But there's about 12 of us that are in here every day. And then we're very flexible. So like I go get my daughter at 2 o'clock, take her home, work the rest of the day from home. You know, like it's flexible, but we're in here just, as they say, 30 minute meetings are great, but the 30 second meeting in the hallway is sometimes more impactful. So, you know, we have that here.
Yeah. So one thing that I've noticed about working from home is that it's really hard to develop relationships with people. And in the 18 months I've been working from home, I probably developed like two or three or four relationships, like a deep bond where a relationship where you move from having Zoom calls to like texting them.
Yeah.
Right. And there's just nothing like meeting people in person to develop a relationship and then going off from there. So it must have been hard, right? Just in the beginning, just being remote when you just started.
Yeah, it was the main thing there. I mean, I had a good 3 weeks in the office, and then I would go to our restaurant that we own and kind of hang out with the COO or the owner, or, you know, we did what we could at that point. But what I found really difficult was actually the franchisee relationships, because I couldn't get in their face at all, and I couldn't go visit, I couldn't see the market. So everything was email, text, phone. And I didn't know them, and they didn't know me. So, you know, that was
like, who the hell is this person here trying to tell me what to do or help me out?
Yes. So that's been the hardest part. And still, I haven't traveled all the markets, you know, like that's going to take a while to get real comfortable with everybody still.
Okay, let's talk about Ginya now. How many franchises are there so everyone can understand that? How many locations are there?
Yeah, we'll be at 40 locations next week. So we're opening one in Charlotte on the 20th, so in about 10 days. But 40 locations, there's about, I'm going to say there's about 15 franchise groups right now, but we've added more that haven't opened yet. So we're in a constant state of growth. We've got about 15 to 20 locations on the docket for the next year and 3 months. So there's a lot of expansion and just a lot of good things happening, but due to COVID, it has been a challenge for sure. But that's it in a nutshell. Just, you know, growth is where we're at.
Yeah. I just have to pause for a sec, because when I look at this restaurant in front of me, I can't believe that's a franchise. It changes every single thing I think about franchises. It is so beautiful, such attention to detail. And I think in the background, I actually see a bar back there.
Correct. So in our concept, there's a few different kinds of locations that we've developed. So what's funny is our corporate location in Studio City that's been here 11 years does not have a bar. We don't have a liquor license. And it's due to a local ordinance because we have one bathroom.
It's always the local ordinance.
Yes. So we don't even have a bar in our home store, but all the other locations do. Some are beer and wine. Some are full license. Some are focused. So for instance, we have one that specializes in whiskey, Japanese whiskey. They have a ton of different varieties. We have one that has different sake, like 100 varieties of sake. So we do have a little bit of differentiation, but what we've fallen into now with the new stores that are going out, heavy focus on full liquor license, craft beer. We want to have at least 10 taps. We want to have local taps. So that's a big part of what the brand is. And moving forward, that's what it will be. So obviously, you know, at Halal Guys, we started as a cart. The original Halal Guys location is on 14th. It's a tiny, it looks nothing like any other Halal Guys. It's just something to show proof of concept. So I feel like Studio City is that for us. But the new locations look amazing and, you know, are being built out a little differently now.
And I believe when we talked previously, I think you said the biggest location right now is Houston.
Yeah, sales volume wise, there's 8 locations in Houston, and the Midtown store is our number one location as far as volume. As far as square foot, we have some locations that are literally about 1250 that goes up to 4,000. I mean, it can be, we have some that are very large, but we have some that are in the middle of a strip mall and you wouldn't know the difference.
Okay. And if I want to set up a franchise, can I do it? Like, how do you set up a franchise?
You can. We brought in franchising in-house. So we've hired Mike LaRue as our VP of franchising. Basically on our website, you can go there, see the requirements. The build outs vary. So obviously with the different size stores, the build out costs do vary, but you can definitely do it. We have markets open now. New York is one. I know you're interested in that.
I want to go to New York. I want one in New York. And by the way, ramen is like some of my favorite food in the world. You know, of course, better at the winter when it's cold, but it's still pretty good all the time.
Yeah, what I found amazing when I started, honestly, was our best markets are hot weather. So Los Angeles, Houston, Atlanta are our highest volume of sales. And I was actually surprised by that because of what you said. But what we found is just our fan base is rabid and, you know, they enjoy it in any weather. So it's been a nice surprise.
And then what's the target demographic of the people who typically go to a Ginya?
We are focused on millennials and Gen Z. We find that those younger folks are our target. We market to them directly. We market to all types of folks. So it's not limited to Asian or African-American or white or whatever. It's for everybody for sure. In different markets, it does vary. In Atlanta, we have a heavy African-American fan base. In, you know, certain markets, we have Asian folks, certain markets, more white people. So we kind of touch all, you know, races and things like that. But as far as the actual demographic, we skew young for sure.
And do you have any data on how often people visit the restaurants? I'm always fascinated by recurring users, yeah. You know, all that data.
We don't have a ton of that yet. That's on my roadmap. So when I came here, we were missing a lot of things that we needed to grow and grow successfully. So I've been working with our team to, you know, pick the right partners and kind of give us what we need. But we don't have a lot of historical. We can't really track that. All we see is the sales data at the end of the day, but we're in a good position. So now it's like figuring out who the customer really is and then marketing to that person. And it's getting in the industry, as you probably know, it's getting more about one-to-one relationships, knowing what people like, what they eat.
Yeah, and that was sort of my point. Like, do people come once a month? Do they come every the week? Is it like a big lunch crowd, a big dinner crowd? Like, it feels like, it's millennials, but it could be coming from all over the place.
Yeah, it's a really healthy mix, I'll say, as far as day partying. We do have a healthy lunch. We have a great dinner. We have happy hour programs at all the locations that have bars. So we have, tapas, and we have drink specials, things like that for happy hour as well from 3 to 5. So it crosses everywhere. Of course, some markets do better at lunch, some do better at dinner, but we're almost a 50-50, honestly, with the splits.
And it feels like if I was going to invent a franchise from the beginning, what you've laid out sort of fits all those criteria, right? Lunch, dinner, younger crowd, cities, a reverent bar, the whole thing. It feels like it's just a nice package.
Yes, and that kind of goes back to our founder, Tomo. He's from Tokyo, obviously. He had restaurants in Japan. When he came to Los Angeles, he wanted to create this experience. He knew what he wanted to do. He tried a lot of ramen, local ramen. He couldn't find any that he liked. So he said, I have to do this for myself, literally. And how we've differentiated over time is the look and feel, elevated menu, like really tying into that. So when you walk into a Jinya, you don't feel like you're in a mom and pop shop. This is a real brand. You can tell right away when you walk in, the music's loud. There's an environment there that you can't replicate at other ramen shops. So we kind of have differentiated over the years through that thinking. And then the other part is Kaizen. We believe in Kaizen here, which means continuous improvement. It's a Japanese business concept that we follow. But I love that because I can bring any new product, any new service, any new partner, and he's usually on board because Kaizen, we want to improve, in all facets of the business.
And I assume when you first got there 18 months ago to today, because you really worked 10 years instead of a year and a half, I assume there's tons of improvement that happened in that time frame.
I would say so. Our COO, Michael Dean, started in January. I started in February. The CTO started in February. The director of training started in February. We're a new team.
Amazing that you all start at the same time.
Yes. And it was through our COO because obviously on operations, what I've found, well, in all facets of the business, but you like to work with people you've worked with. So our COO was able to bring in some operators that he knew, which helped set that foundation. He didn't know me, but he picked me. He picked David, who's our CTO. We hit it off on day one. We had the same wavelength.
You got to stop right there. I think the most important thing when we talked previously was the fact that you, the head of marketing, and the CTO are in sync 100%, right?
Yes. And that was, we just started talking on day one, literally, and we knew some of the same people in the industry and things like that. But then we started talking about, well, what was your experience with X company? What was your experience with X company? What do you think about this? We kind of just checked all the boxes together and we were literally on the same page from day one. So that has not been difficult at all. And he thinks like I do. I think IT is and marketing are tied at the hip, and so does he. So it works very well.
Tell me a little bit about marketing. So when you market, how locally are you marketing and how much do you work with the franchisees to sort of figure out your strategies?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do and why I brought on Hyperlocology after talking to them was I came from a digital startup in my past. I understood how local marketing mattered. Coming here, I didn't have the tools to do it right. So Hyperlocology has helped with that. We're developing audiences based on every location. We're seeing how they're different because in LA, it's different than Omaha, Nebraska. It's different than Tulsa. Those people are different. They might skew older, younger, So we're really trying to build it out so we know exactly what's going on out there. So
does that mean your 20 different franchises all have slightly different marketing campaigns, target marketing, everything about it?
Targeting the campaigns themselves are kind of the same creative. Yes.
Are the 20 restaurants all sort of have the same look and feel, I assume, right?
All the interiors and things are the same for sure.
But when it comes to the demographics, the people, everything is slightly different in all 20, right?
it's what we're finding. I don't think we knew that before the last, you know, year, but what we're finding is through our data is, you know, who are these people really? And then let's really find more like them in each market, at each location, hyper-locally. So like, that's why I like hyper-locology, because we can really do that.
Okay, when you're looking for a new franchise, do they say, hey, can you tell me about the demographics of this area? Is it right? Like, are you getting involved in some of those conversations too?
A little bit. We have, forgive me, I don't know the names of the tools, but I know Mike has other tools that are for that exact purpose of, you know, finding areas, seeing the day flow, traffic, you know, all that sort of thing that you do when you're franchising and finding locations. We do have some steadfast sort of rules that we go by as far as like, what is a good market for us? What does it look like, you know, as far as income, as far as demographics, all that. We have sort of a set playbook there, but we don't vary from that often, but we have in the past a little bit, but it's kind of in stone what we're doing.
Pretty cool. And how do you gauge success of your marketing campaigns? Like, what are you looking at the end of the day or at the end of the month or quarter?
For me, since I'm not in a sales challenge organization, I'll start there because it would look a lot different if I was, but since I'm not, I like to push the boundaries. I like to show people things that they've never seen in our space if I can.
Oh,
I
love, like what? Give me examples of that. Well, like what?
At Halal Guys did a collaboration with an artist based here in LA named Risk. We made a custom Halal Guys t-shirt of the carts that he created. We gave it to our best 500 loyalty members as nothing, you know, they didn't have to do anything for it. It was a surprise and delight, but we got a lot of nice press from that. And it was like, oh, wow, how did they do that? Did a shoe at the Halal Guys with Clark's. We did a wallaby in the red and the white.
Dude, one red and one, there you go. One red, one white, right?
And it had our branding on it and their branding. And it was in a boutique in New York, like things like that, that really connect to the culture. And especially in New York at the Halal Guys, the street brand. I was huge on like working with local artists, local designers, you know, really tying into the roots of New York, because it was, that's what you should do. That's a street brand, right? Here, it's much different. It's a traditional Japanese founder, but we're in America. So now it's like, how do we make ramen cool? How do we place ourselves as a leader in the space? I've been telling our team, we need to do more. Why do we make the egg the way we do? Why do we pull ramen from the bottom of the bowl? Why we need to be the leader and show people how this works or how it should.
Right, because like, isn't something about the miso takes 24 hours or something, whatever, like that's sort of part of the story.
Things like our broth, they're cooked, the pork broth is 20 hours. It's a 20-hour process. So if you tell someone that and show them that, I think it's highly impactful because they're like, wow, these guys really care about what they're doing. So we're moving in that direction, kind of showing the guts and trying to open up. And what I'd love to do, and I don't know if we'll get there yet, but.
So tell me about social media. Like, how do you use social media today? Has it changed at all in the past year, you know, since COVID? Like, how do you think about it now?
What's great about it and what's terrible and, you know, scary is it changes at all times. It's always changing. So if you don't have your finger on the pulse, in my opinion, you need to hire someone who does and really help walk your brand through that.
How about Instagram and Facebook versus just TikTok? How do you think about them? Or is TikTok all the rage today?
I think for us as a brand, the focus has been Instagram. Yes, we use Facebook. Yes, we have local pages on Facebook so our franchisees can put dollars behind things if they want, things like that. We do use those tools. I think in general, Facebook is looked at as the old person's platform now, or people don't really care that are young, that are our demographics. So we have to find these new channels. So Instagram is a big one. It's been working with hyperlocology. It's been about trying to maximize, use video creative over photos. You know, we were very photo heavy. So now we're trying to get more video. I've been pushing that internally, but really trying to maximize what those platforms do. The hardest part for me is that my founder / CEO loves the brand and cares so much. He's worried about us looking a certain way, where I said, on TikTok, there are no rules. We need to trust the kids, put them in charge, let them take the brand, and you can't worry about it because what you like is not what a 13, 14, 18-year-old likes. So you have to let go. So getting him to do that has been a little bit of a challenge, but it's gonna be rewarding once we get there and he kind of trusts the process.
The videos you make, how do you make them? Who's making them? Are they 15s, 30s, 45s? Tell me a little bit more about that.
I learned this from an agency that I didn't even work with, but I learned their content strategy, which was create a great piece of content and then edit, chop it down, right? And so you're doing one shoot, but then you're using it for a lot of purposes. So that's what I've tried to instill here. Let's take a day and get as much content as we can. Then it comes down to editing. So then I need a minute long video for YouTube to explain how we make a ramen. I need a 30 second for a Instagram ad. I need 15 for TikTok. So getting that in my designer's head has been a challenge, but he's coming around to understanding, okay, I know what's important about this. In a minute long video, we want to show the details. We want to show the nuts and bolts. 15 seconds, it has to be quick cuts. Here it is. You know, so that's all a learning process, but that's what we're moving to.
When you wake up in the morning, or at what point of the day, what data do you look at coming to you that's the most important, that'll drive your day? Is it sales? Is it average ticket price? Like, what sort of is those metrics that drive you?
It's currently sales. I would say there's a lot of anecdotal things though for us where, you know, in a franchise experience, you kind of know who's operating correctly and who's not, just based on a lot of factors, sales, audits, all these things. So a lot of my time is spent trying to prop up the, you know, four or five locations that are underperforming versus helping the, you know, 35 that are great. So what I've tried to do honestly is pick partners and tools where it's almost a self-serve, you know, philosophy where I set it up for you and I set it up so that it's going to succeed. And then it's up to you. If you want to put money on a digital ad through Hyperlocology, here it is. If you want to do a mailer, here's the partner. If you want to do all these things, I don't want to say no to you, but I want to say, I wouldn't do a mailer, but if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you want to do a mailer, fine. Here's a great partner. You know, so that's how I've tried to attack it, where I can focus my energy on expanding the brand, doing new things, new and exciting things, but then have we call it the blocking and tackling, right? So all the blocking and tackling is there for you. I just set that up for you as a franchisee here, but you're on your own. You got to do your own thing. I'll report back. I'll say what's working, what's not. You can look at your own data. They'll always be optimizing on your behalf. Things like that are super important to me because I don't have time to go into all 40 and say what's exactly working here.
Does your wife and daughter go? Do you bring them there? Do they love it?
They love it. My wife was actually a fan before I even knew about the brand. She had went there for years and then we started going together. And so I knew about the brand before I came, but my daughter loves it. We have this amazing kids meal. I mean, this is weird, but like, it's so much food. People say online, like, that's like enough for two kids, right? Because you get a ramen, you get a side, you get ice cream, you get fries, you get chicken, all this stuff. My kid loves it. Like all the parts of it. She just feels happy when we go and she's, you know, so she loves it for sure. But really our menu, there's something for everyone on it. It's even if you don't want ramen, we've got like sushi bowls. We have some other, you know, we have pork bowl. We just did a deal with Impossible. So now they're our partner for all the you know, plant-based meats. We're launching that. So it's just, there's a lot of excitement, but there's something for everyone at Genia for sure.
How many people work at the average store or ballpark?
Well, we would love to have 50, but some stores are like 20, 30 now with hiring where it's at. It's been very tough in a lot of markets for a lot of reasons. I would say none of our stores are currently full staffed. And I think the industry is feeling that as a whole, obviously. I just wish Yelp would put up a little disclaimer like, hey, before you write this review today, just remember, you know, remember what's going on.
New metrics, at least, like new metrics you need out there just about staffing and what's going on to be able to put things into perspective.
Yeah, and who knows? They may be, their algorithm may be tweaked. So, okay, all those one stars that say we had bad service, not enough waiters, whatever, maybe they edit those out or something and don't put them in the front. I don't know that, but they don't share that either. So who knows? But I just really feel like if you gave a customer a pop-up that said, before you write this review, please realize that most restaurants are understaffed, et cetera, it's COVID. Just something, you know, I don't know.
Or I walk into a restaurant, it's like, you know, we're 60% staffed today. Give us a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you handling that, Justin? How has that affected your business?
I mean, the consumer expectation, in my view, has not changed. That you expect to go back to 2019 service and you expect to go back to Virginia and go, I had a great experience here before COVID, now I'm back. Why is it not the same? You know, and people are definitely saying that sometimes. They're saying, you know, this was slow. It took, you know, too long to get my check. Just these things that like, yeah, that happens. We get it. But when you're one waiter and you have a whole section, you know, and it's much more than you used to, that's going to happen. So just the expectation hasn't really changed, I don't think. And one of the problems is just human nature. People go back to their favorites and they say, I want it like it was. And then if it's not, I get it, you know? So it is a slippery slope, but we're doing the best we can. I mean, that's all I could say.
The thing I love about restaurants, or the thing I hate about restaurants, is paying the bill. And I wish there was an easier way where you scan something, there's your bill, you write your tip, your 25% tip, and you just walk out and leave. And that's got to change eventually.
We are testing that exact thing. So we have that in Studio City right now. We want to have that everywhere, of course. What we ran into was we had two different products, like two different solutions for that. So we kind of A and B tested, and I think we found one we like, but I'm with you. I'll say this. I go to, you know, maybe smaller brands or like breweries where you have a tap room and a restaurant, and literally there's the QR code, boom, I order, I add to my tab, I leave whenever I want. I love that too. You know, I think we'll get there. I think most restaurants will. We're not there yet, but we're on pace.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is at a nice restaurant with my family, and they had that app, and I paid with the app. I just pick up and I say, let's just leave. We're not going to pay the bill, and they all crack up.
Exactly.
Okay, Debbie, on that note, I could go on for another half an hour, but Debbie, I think we'll wrap up. It's been 30 minutes.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. I hope everyone listening had a good experience and got some good nuggets from Justin and MSG today. If you have any questions about hyperlocology, or if you have any follow-up questions for Justin, please feel free to ping them to me directly at debbie@hyperlocology.com. Thanks so much, everyone. Have an awesome day.
Thank you.
Bye.